Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I want to welcome our weekly guest, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, back again to speak on many topics involving damaging effects on individuals of injustices in the U.S., in addition to another guest that we will have on with us, Sheila Arnold, a woman who lost her sister through a fatal offense and mother whose son died while in prison 2 years ago. Ms. Arnold, a community activist, has suffered enormously throughout the years, but still finds strength in putting an end to all injustices within the penal system and in the communities. Criminal justice reform in the United States is long overdue, and our guest today will discuss why and where it needs to start. So once again, let's welcome our guest, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, advocate, and author of an upcoming book to be announced, and Sheila Arnold, whose story will touch many hearts. And Marion, we're going to start with you. If you can, once again, just let the audience know something about yourself, which I'm sure by now everyone knows. But if you can, just update anyone who hasn't heard the hasn't been on the show before.
I am Marion Jacobs. I live in the Netherlands. And in my country, I work with incarcerated people. And besides that, I work with people who suffer from psychological problems and live in their homes. I work as a philosophical therapist. I've written a book. It's called Lost in the System. And it's an analyze or a deconstruction about the system and how it is built in the society. So it also involves politics and economy and social issues. And now I'm graduating for my Master of Philosophy, and my thesis is also about this subject. So I'm currently going deeper, even deeper into this issue to understand really what's going on. My approach is very important to mention. I think it's, I call it deeper justice, and it's about approaching the human being behind the crime or the psychological issues, and try to bring more awareness of what has happened, what led to the crime, and how can things change positively for the person who is incarcerated or who is suffering from issues.
And for those of you in the audience, I just want to, first of all, let you know, Marion Jacobs is not only just a writer and an author. She has had extensive experience working with prisoners in prisons in the United States as well as in the Netherlands. Marion Jacobs has been doing so much research, so many studies. She's been involved in so many things, and I'm sure she's exhausted, and that's why I feel honored to have her on the show, because she has been taking time to come on to the show to talk to everyone about the things that are going on, the comparison between the prisons in the United States and the prisons in not only the Netherlands but across the world. So I want to once again thank you, Marion, for coming on, and we're going to hear more from Marion in a few minutes, but I also want to introduce our guest. Her name is Sheila Arnold, and she also has a story to tell. And she is, as I mentioned previously, an activist in the community. So, Sheila, do you want to tell the audience a little bit about yourself?
Yes. Hi. First of all, I want to thank you for inviting me on the show to share my story, which many parents and mothers, sisters, families are going through as well. So I want to thank you so very much. So I would like to start with saying, you're welcome. On November 9th of 2019, I was taking a friend to see their family member in Wabash Valley Prison in Indianapolis, Terre Haute, Indiana. And as we were on our way to the prison, about an hour in, her brother from the prison called her phone and to tell me that there was a medical emergency in my son's room. And then he hung up and called back, and he said that they were doing CPR on my son. And then he hung up and called back again and said that my son was dead. I proceeded to go to the prison, and by the time I got there, they asked me, who did you want to see? And I said, I can't see him. He just died in your prison. And they went and got, you know, the officers, the people that were on the scene. And I asked them, I said, can I see my son's body? And they told me no. They said, we don't do that. And I kind of fell out. And it's like, I need to see my son before he leaves this prison like that. And they said, let us talk to the ward. We'll see what we can do. So they came back and they said, you can see your son. So they took me in a police car behind the prison. And I sat in the car and I prayed. I am a believer. Prayed to God for strength because I was just terribly broken down. But a part of me knew I had to see my son. And so I proceeded to the ambulance, and they opened the body bag, and it was my son. And I just looked at his face, and I knew something was peculiar about his face, because as a person just dying, as the phone calls, they said, my son, both of his eyes were open, and they were totally black. His lips were totally black. His face, he did not look like a person that just died. And so I'm going to kind of just zip a little forward. And then he had a blunt force, like had a trauma to his forehead. I've seen blood. And so anyway, later on, they brought his body back to Indianapolis, Indiana. And I was allowed to see my son's body completely nude. And it was very, 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 very horrific. My son had several stab wounds on his body. And it was just, it's been a nightmare ever since. And so the autopsy came out that they said that my son had drugs in his system, and it said that he had stabbed himself up. And so I continued to read the autopsy, but it also says in there that they found that there was a broken bone in his neck and signs of intubation. And I couldn't understand that. I looked up the bone. It was like close to a hyoid bone in the throat, and we all have that, and it's very protected. And it says that the way that could be fractured only through maybe strangulation or someone trying to hang themselves. I just kind of looked it up. And the intubation is when someone, I'm sorry, I can't pronounce it very well, is when they try to put a tube down your throat, like trying to save you, trying to save someone. So, and also, there are no pictures. I have no pictures of the crime scene. I have no, nothing where, what the guard said. It's just only what the prisoner said. No time of death. There are so many unanswered questions up under the rock, and I've been desperately looking for a lawyer, looking for answers, because it just does not make it does not make any sense. So many unanswered question about my son's death, and I can't sleep, and my spirit, I just can't let it go. It's and most people that read, I tell them about it. It's missing pieces, some type of cover up. That's what I believe, because they didn't give me all the answers. I don't have all the questions answered about my son.
Yeah.
And that he actually did this to himself, and no guards, nobody around. They said he was yelling and all of that. No responsibility in the report on the guards at all. It was all that the inmate went and told the guard. And the other inmates on the outside said that they heard him yelling and everything, like maybe he had this reaction. But it says nothing about no resuscitation, no guards trying to help, or it's just nothing, nothing at all.
Mariam, I know Mariam is only going to be able to be on with us for an hour, so I want to hear from her. But Mariam, what do you think? What are your thoughts on what happened with her son? I mean, these things do occur in prisons, and I just want to know if you've ever encountered anything similar to that, or have heard or seen anything like that before.
Now, what comes up in me is that nobody is taking any responsibility. And that's what I found in how the pattern of how the system functions, because they try to cover up things. They don't give a clear picture of what really has happened. And there is a lot of bureaucracy. Yeah, there is a lot of bureaucracy where it's very difficult to, you know, to push through that. So everybody is covering up each other and nobody's taking responsibility. And that's why, that's what I see as a pattern. You see it back in many of these situations, issues that happen in prison, that nobody takes responsibility and everybody's pointing towards each other. And missing pieces means that you cannot fully grasp things. And for as long as you cannot fully grasp what has happened, you are not able to point at people for their responsibility. And that's why they can avoid that you could sue them, or, you know, now your hands are empty. You cannot say, hey, this is a bad system, or because it's all covered up. And that's part of the policy of the prison. It's a very conscious way of dealing with these issues. What happened, and that makes it so sad. It's not a one, you know, it's not a one-time event. This happens all the time, and it's a conscious choice to do it that way, and that makes it dangerous.
Mm. You mentioned,
yes, and I wanted to,
Marion, you mentioned previously about the institutions in the United States and the Nazi mentality of these prisons and the harshness and the coldness of them. And can you speak a little bit about that? Because I see that happening so much in the prisons, not only what Sheila is talking about, but also others who have lost loved ones through horrific deaths. And it's so barbaric. And the way the prison system is set up is so barbaric. And I wanted to just have you talk a little bit more about what you mentioned this before about the Nazi mentality and the way the institutions are built and how they're torturous.
Yeah, well, what I'm doing in my research and now also writing about is that I compare the structure. It's really about structures, the ground structure of the concentration camps and the ground structure of the prison system. So I'm not talking about what we see, but I'm talking about what we don't see. And one thing which is very important to see, and this example of Sheila also emphasizes it, is that it is policy. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident. It's a policy. And I think what I really want to emphasize, why I really want to emphasize this, is that it's a conscious choice. And that makes it so different. And that's what you also saw in the concentration camps. And it starts, of course, with dehumanizing the people who are incarcerated. If you, you know, if you dehumanize a person, then the person is no longer a human being to you. And then you can do whatever you want to do with that person. And that's the most painful part. So the son of Sheila was in the prison. He wasn't seen as a human being, you see, and that's why all this can happen. And that has a similarity with the concentration camps, because the Jewish people were also not seen as human beings. You know, there was a distinction between human beings and Jewish people or Jews. There is also a distinction between human beings and the inmate, the label, the inmate. And because they are turned into inmates, all this can happen, because we would never do such a thing or keep information away or lie about things when it would be a human being in the free world. We would never be able to do that. We would be sued. We would, you know, commit a crime. Mm-hmm. But in the system, it can be done, because nobody takes responsibility, because the humanity is taken away. And now this is an example for about how dangerous the system is and what it tells us about how society looks at people who are incarcerated.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about patterns.
When you mentioned prisoners being looked at in the penal system by the prison officials and guards as being objects, that's exactly what it seems as though they're treated like objects. And Sheila mentioned how her son, they said he was on drugs and he stabbed himself multiple times. There was a situation with a person that was shot in the back of the head by a police officer, and it was all over Facebook at one time, and the police was saying he shot himself. How in the world can somebody shoot themselves in the back of the head? The same situation with the stabbing. How can somebody stab themselves multiple times simply because they have drugs in their system? And we don't know where the drugs came from. Was it planted in his system? You know, was it one of those situations? So, Sheila, Mariam, continue where you were talking about.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing. What you see here is that Sheila only can guess. It's all about guessing without clarity.
Mm-hmm.
And that weakens the families. That weakens Sheila.
Yeah.
And that's the power. That's the power of the system.
Mm-hmm.
The system makes sure that the people on the outside, the families, the loved ones, are weakened because they only can guess. They will never know exactly what is happening inside the system. We don't really know that. And that's the whole problem. There is no clarity. There is no openness. Why is there no clarity? Why are pieces of this puzzle missing? What do they have to hide? I mean, if it's all legal, then it all should be on the surface. Then there are no secrets to hide. But if a family member says, hey, I have pieces missing, I miss answers. I don't get answers from the system. Then you can ask yourself, why? What do you have to hide? Because if there's nothing to hide, then you can tell everything.
You know, that is true. That is so true.
It
when
is.
They cover up.
And the painful thing is, this is not an individual situation. This is common. This is happening on a daily basis because this is part of policy in all the states. And some prisons might be a little bit better. Some prisons might be a little bit worse because every state is different. But the ground structure is the same everywhere. And so this is not a isolated happening. This is policy. So this is a conscious choice to do it this way. And that's what I really want to emphasize all the time. Be aware that this is not an accident. This is happening every day. This is policy. So politics, and it's intertwined with economy. We know it's a million-dollar industry. Is choosing to do it this way. There is a choice involved.
Mm-hmm. You know, the sad thing is, until they start making changes, this is going to continue, and it's going to get worse. And this is what's so sad is we have in this United States, U.S. representatives, state representatives, legislative members, all of these people, there's thousands of them. And what is actually being done? They're so in opposition to one another that they don't want to do something because the other party is suggesting it, that the people in this country are suffering, whether they be behind bars, whether they be in the communities, in their homes, the homes of others. Something needs to be done. And transparency in the penal system needs to be mandated. It needs to be mandated because there is not enough transparency in the prison system to see all the injustices that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
I know of prisoners that were brutally attacked and beaten, and they couldn't get any help from lawyers, and the videos that would have substantiated the abuse were never asked for. They were never requested by any legislative member, any lawyers, or anyone. So the prison keeps getting away. The prison officials keep getting away with all of these things. Because they're getting away with it, it continues to go on.
Yes.
Sheila, how do you deal with it now, right now? How long is it ago?
Well, it was in 2019. It'll be coming up 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I am a believer, a spiritual woman, you know, a woman of God, Lord Jesus Christ and Savior. And basically that is the foundation of how I deal with it. And then I had, you know, a few friends, some people would like say, hey, you know, go on a little vacation or, you know, just talk about it. And I also want one thing that I wanted to commend you on and about like the background, like what happened. And I just wanted to put in there if they cared even through this whole time, the background of my son. Well, I just want to say real quick that my sister was murdered by her husband in 1995 in front of her six children. I took those six kids in, and that's when I had my son, Rock. And he had said, Mommy, he was very young. He said, Mommy, why do they have to live with us? So he felt that he was losing me. And I actually, that's when I lost him to the streets and to the gangs. I raised eight children. I had two sons. And the Indianapolis, I did not get the help that I needed to raise the children. I could not get boy mentors. It was a great struggle. And my son, he, you know, just like a lot of young boys that don't have fathers and you don't have the money to do what you need to do, he just kind of, you know, kept falling off. And I did the best that I could to raise all the children because of the trauma that happened to our family. And you know, one thing just led to another, and the thing about what you were saying, it's like, what is the background? What happened to the offender? What could have been done? What could the city, you know, the resources, what could have been done? And I remember seeing the CPS people, like, watching the home to see, you know, if I was a good parent. And I thought to myself, you know what, they are busy watching the home to try to see if they want to take away my kids instead of coming in, sitting down, talking with me, asking me, what can they do to help? And these were, I took in six orphans. And I just wanted to mention that because that is very important. You know, they just think that they are, you know, they got that way or they have something going on for no reason at all, you know, and that matters because at some point, you know, help is needed, you know, to find out what's going on or not necessarily sent to a prison, which is supposed to be correction, you know, some type of rehab, just some type of help. But it is not there, and they don't really care. Like you said, it's a racket to make money. Just put them in, and more, even more so in the United States with black men. That's basically. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to respond to that, Sheila, because you, after your sister died, you took her six children in, and you tried to get help from CP, Children's Protective Services. And I want to say one thing about Children's Protective Services. Had you not taken your sister's six children in, those children would have gone into Children's Protective Services, and it would have cost the state a lot of money to not only to keep those children and pay those children, pay the providers, the foster care providers, but those children, it would have cost the state so much money for not only the foster care, but also the medical, the dental, and all of these things. So this is why you should have gotten the help from them, some help in raising those children. And as you said, by raising your sister's six children, your two sons were getting the less attention that they could have been getting had you not taken in the six children. I just want to say one thing, and I want feedback from you and Marion, because one of the things that I have to say, in the United States right now, they're talking about abortion, especially in Texas. They're talking about banning abortions. And I said, people that are for, that are pro-life, that want to keep the children, they need to look at it both ways. In this society that we live in this country, if we're going to be pro-life, then we have to be pro-life at both ends. Not only when they're born, when they're in the womb, but also the consequences of anything that happens throughout their years, whether it be from the environment or whether it be from themselves or whatever the case, to end up stumbling or being stumbled and going to prison and either getting the death sentence or getting life without parole. Life is life. And I had posted something like that on Facebook, and someone responded, some woman responded saying that's totally different. And it's not totally different. We're talking about lives. We're talking about support. In this country, and Maryam, you've said it so many times before, in this country, it's all about racism. It's all about hatred. It's all about greed, power, corruption. There's nothing in between that can even discuss or explore compassion and support and helping one another. We live in a cold country. People will turn their backs, and then when somebody falls, they will judge them without even knowing them. A lot of people have been judged based on what other people have said about them, that other people didn't even know them. So we live in a society where people just judge without knowing the facts, without knowing the individual, without knowing anything about the cases.
Yes.
It's a shame. It really is. And I'd like to have somebody's feedback on that.
Yeah, what I hear from you, Sheila, is that you say that you didn't really have a social network from community to fall.
Yes.
That helps you. We talked about it in shows before that, you know, in your country, a lot is privatized. So there is no official social network where that can help you. And what I, if I'm right, that I, when I heard you right, is that there was only some kind of control if you were doing it okay, and if you would not do it okay,
yeah,
then your kids would,
yeah,
be taken away. That has,
yes,
to do with,
yes,
that. Yeah, so you are under control, and control is always bringing tension, and there was no really help. And then you see that, you know, the problems that you see in prison start in community. They don't start in prison. They start in community. Because,
yeah,
if you would have had to help from a social network, an official, you know, social network sponsored,
yeah,
by or built by politics, then the picture would have been completely different.
Yes. Yes.
And what I see, control is many times based on biases. You know, you feel that you have to do it right, but what is right? We all make mistakes in our raising kids. I have 4 kids myself. I do things good and I do things very wrong. I am a human being, yes.
Yes.
So you see where it starts, and it doesn't start with who is right or who is wrong. But what you see is that it starts in a community who is not there for, in this case, for you to support you in what you are doing, because you are doing a beautiful job. And you get, in fact, punished for that,
yeah,
in a way. And
yeah,
that's, I,
yeah,
think, and that's where you see that this ground structure that I talk about what you see in the prison system, starts in community. It starts in community, and that's so sad because a lot of people are victims of this privatizing world where you have to pay for everything, where money is going to military and all these big corporations, instead of that tax money is going back to the communities to help the people who really need it. That's what I hear and that's what I see.
It's a shame.
Yes, And to expound too, as far as like the prison, you know, the phone calls I had to pay for, the food I had to order, and then the money that the taxpayers are paying and the guards that are being paid, it's all really a shame, because that money, a lot of that money is going to fund Richard, the big person, their fine homes, cars, traveling, and things like that. And the taxpayers, they just don't really realize it's not enough noise or not enough unity to say, hey, actually, this is what you are paying people to do and allowing with your tax dollars, because they don't care how they use your money. They're not using your money properly. And like I said, they gouge the families. And for me, I want justice. I don't know how far this thing is going to go or what God is going to allow, but I have to try because I need closure. I want to expose my story and accountability And because, like I said, I was a believer, and at the end of the day, all shall enter into judgment.
And
all
Miriam, you
one
mentioned,
day.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned corporations, and she was just speaking on that with the wealthy. If you can talk a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, well, I think what I figured out with my research is that is in fact the biggest problem, the corporal power. In fact, the transformation that has to take place in the United States is that they go from the corporal states of America back to the United States of America, because you have a class society and there is no middle. So you have this these corporations who lobby in the White House. So it's in fact corporations that indirectly they decide the law. They are so influential because they pay endless, huge amounts of money for all these campaigns that politicians want to have to do. So they have such a large influence in the White House. So they make the law, and these laws are in the benefit of the wealthy people and the corporations. And because of the corporations, they have long ago, it was after the Civil War, I think, they have made this very clever move that they are legally fall under the 14th Amendment. So they are approached as private persons. So they have the same rights and the same obligations, but they are, and that makes a huge difference for them. They are not responsible for the damage they do for the environment. And you can see that in the prison system, because if you look at the food industry, the healthcare industry, it's all industries, the phone companies, etc. They are not, all these companies, they are not responsible for the incarcerated people. They are only responsible by law. Don't forget it, it's by law. They are only responsible to the stockholders. It's written by law that corporations have only one goal, and that's make as much money as possible in as less time as possible. It's what they have to do. They don't. So then you can wonder who is responsible for the incarcerated people. I cannot point to any party, anyone who is responsible for the incarcerated people. I mean, when you look at politics, voting right is taken away, so they are in that way less than citizens. They do have prison rights, but what you see is that these procedures to fill in to sue or fill in complaints, they are so restrained, they are so They have the rights and they can complain, but they make it so difficult for an incarcerated individual to do so. There are so many examples of, you know, an incarcerated person wants to fill in a form for a complaint, and he has to do it for a certain date. And right before that date, he's put in solitary confinement for a few weeks. And when he gets out, you know, he's too late. So he has to start all over. And this can take weeks, months, years. So, in fact, he has no rights. He cannot. He has rights, but he cannot touch the rights because, you know, he's being held back or bullied by guards or whatever. When you look political, there is no responsibility either. So then I wonder who feels responsibility for the incarcerated individuals. I mean, when I think that more than 90% of cases are going to a plea bargain, they even don't go to court. So there's no justice done. It's just, you know, a business thing. How many people are incarcerated while being innocent because of that? The bail bond industry is another thing. It's a money business which starts already in the streets, and it becomes very clear in the system.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say, too, you mentioned when you talk about this, voting rights. Years ago, prisoners never had their rights taken away from them. Years ago, prisoners had some kind of inclusion. Nowadays, it's like they're taking everything. And they had that January 6th insurrection at the Capitol. Those very people did something outrageous to the country. People will not get their rights taken from them, but yet prisoners who have committed an offense against someone else or even a wrongfully convicted person, you know, they're having their rights taken away. What kind of mentality is that in our government when they can take away the rights of prisoners for committing crimes and the biggest crime committed ever against this country, and half of these people are not even being held accountable? So when we look at the rights of prisoners, their rights have all been taken away. There's so many people that are incarcerated that have not even harmed anything, have not even done anything fatal.
I think an important question is always why? What's the reason? What's the purpose of that? Somebody benefits from taking voting rights away. You always have to ask, and who benefits from this system? Because it's not simply there for fun. There are parties who benefit from this way of incarceration. And that's what you have to get very clear, who they are and what's the purpose, who benefits from it. Those are very important questions, because by these questions, people become aware of what is really happening here.
They're taking the rights away from prisoners because they know if prisoners have their rights to vote, then they can vote against anyone who is for prison or who is for incarceration. They can support the legislative members who are trying to do the prison reform. So right now, voting rights for prisoners is a major issue, and it's not occurring. And I think because what you just mentioned, Mariam, is one of the main reasons. It's first of all losing money if they release these prisoners, and this is what's causing so much mass incarceration in this country.
Yeah, I think this the prison system benefits the high class on several ways, because it makes sure that communities stay divided. You know, we talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Racism is a problem for people in the street, but it's a tool for the wealthy ones and the corporations, because for as long people fight each other, they don't unite and protest. So it has a function, and that's what we have to see. It has a function, and we all do it. Another thing is by, you know, locking up everybody in prison, it's the cheapest way to do that. I mean, well, we have to open psychiatric hospitals, forensic psychiatric hospitals, then there has to be investment. And politics, economy is not, doesn't want to invest in that because they want to use their money on another way. So everybody ends up in prison, whether you have a psychological problem, issues, trauma, etc. Even the elderly people in wheelchairs stay in the prison. So I cannot call it a prison anymore. It's one big warehouse for everybody who cannot walk in that line. To walk in the line in community, there is a huge control. Mm-hmm. And that started, I believe it was with Bill Clinton when he militarized the police. That's where the control starts. What you see in the prison with the control, beatings, fear, put a lot of fear in people. And there's a lot of, you know, people are so afraid. Callers are afraid of each other. We are afraid of people who carry guns. So we also carry guns because the other, you know, for the other people who carry guns. So it's all based on fear. And if you put fear in people, they do what you want to do. They do what you want them to do. So we fear people in the prison. So lock them up because they are dangerous. It's all one big game, and it all benefits these really worldwide huge corporations. And that already, you know, started in World War II, where some companies got very big by war, because war is another way to earn a lot of money, because also the war is privatized. So
yeah.
I think that the corporations...
The current President Biden has been trying to do this infrastructure, get this budget passed. And there is one woman, her last name is Sinema, and she's been holding up the works because they want the billionaires, the corporations, to pay a higher tax. And this woman is against it. And that one person is holding up the entire budget for the country. That one woman, because she doesn't want to see the rich, the wealthiest, pay taxes. And Joe Biden, the president, is talking about people who are making billions and billions of dollars, not someone that's making $100,000 or $400,000, but people that are making billions of dollars. And it takes one legislative member to hold up the entire works because she doesn't want to have to pay or see her peers or whomever paying higher taxes. But
So the United States is really the American dream for the corporation and the wealthy ones, and the other people who are dreaming, and the common people in communities are dreaming that only dreaming their dream, but they are used as commodity to feed the pockets of the wealthy ones.
These corporations are making money off of the penal system. And that's the sad thing about it. And celebrities as well. There are celebrities out there that are making money off of the incarcerations. There are all kinds of people that are making so much money. And this is why, as you say, they're using these prisons as a warehouse, like cattle just going in and selling. It's unbelievable. And for people who are dying in prison, what relief? Relief is there for the parents or the relatives, the sisters, the brothers, the grandparents, the uncles and aunts and cousins? What relief is there? And they're killing these people off, and they're making them crazy with these solitary confinement, restrictive housing, you know, these death penalties. We're talking about a country who the government is the people, but yet the people are not acting. They're allowing handfuls of wealthy legislative members to control, or government to control, the entire country. And in the meantime, these unions for the law enforcement and for the Department of Corrections nationwide, these unions are so powerful that they're defending all of the injustices that are going on in the prisons. So here we have legislative members who are fighting amongst themselves, don't want to really do much of anything, and we have unions that are preventing anybody from being held accountable that's in uniform or with titles, and that are killing people off or making them go crazy. Will there be justice for Sheila, for her son? Will there be justice for Daryl Rainey, who was scalded to death by prison guards? Will there be justice for any of these people that have been shot in the back, that have been totally messed up psychologically and physically? Will there be justice? I don't know.
Yeah, and the problem is, because these corporations and the privatized prisons, they fall under the 14th Amendment. Sometimes there is, like with Daryl Rainey, I believe it was, that families sue the prison system, and then they get money paid. But that's only, falling under the 14th Amendment means that the prison system is not bound to change policy. That's why this can happen over and over again. Like what you had a while ago, the women's prison in Florida with all the rapes, you know, that has been going on for decades. And sometimes somebody can sue the prison system, and the prison system, when it loses the case, it will pay. But it will not learn from it and change policy.
No. We have a call. Do you want to state your name, please? 605?
Yes, this is Yeah, this is Chinupa Gluha Money from the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation here in South Dakota. How you doing, sister? Long time no hear.
Yeah.
I haven't been on your shows for quite a time. Quite some time I haven't been on your shows because I've been dealing with a lot of issues in Indian country. But here's a real strong, you know, a question that I will ascertain this way with. You know, and tell people in general, and you hit the nail right on the head because of how sociological deformatory works in this country called Turtle Island. I hate that crass term, America. There's no such thing. But until people break the prelude of this understanding, you will see America, since they gave it the name back in when they start honoring their 1776 declaration, you will always see that the corporation took over America's free way of thinking from an independent structure. This is why you have massive incarceration rates. Don't forget, folks, in the listening audience, when you take a look at my African people that were illegally brought over into this country of Turtle Island, you will see the injustice has completely was forced upon them and continues to still be upon them because they stripped them of their names, their identity, and most importantly, their language. And so many indigenous people face the same thing. This is why the color of the black man and the red man are still incarcerated at alarming standards. These are grave human rights violations, but nobody is blaming the white man. Biden can talk all he wants about philosophical standards that might meet a criteria, but here's the man trying to force federal mandates to force people to take the vaccine, keep the mask on. No, you cannot do that. That's capitalistic control. That's what communist countries do. And all communist countries throughout history fell because of that kind of dictatorship. They don't want to hear that. There are law enforcement people, correctional officers from state and federal penitentiaries leaving the criteria. They're walking away. They don't want to be employed by it because of this and because of the mass incarceration rate. America has always practiced and perfected colonial policies to stop human rights from being asserted the way it should be from the population of us people struggling to remain free. And as long as we have a Social Security card number, a BIA federal number, or whatever the number is, this is how they monitor. Don't forget the White Man's Bible in the book of Revelation. When you go to, I think it's chapter 2, verse 9, the synagogues were people that the devil pulled in, okay? I read all their seven Bibles, so I understand them. The synagogue were rich people that were Jewish people, not real Jewish people from the earth. There's two different discrepancies between, that's just like the native people. You have the full blood, and then you have the half-breed, okay? The half-breed are the ones that were forced upon by white slavery's mentality of how white people used the red people as slaves and forced themselves upon them and then annihilated them. So all them eastern shorelines out in the East Coast from Maine to Florida and inward, there's no more indigenous population out there thanks to that evil white man. That's how the Jewish people implemented their power of control. Every nation that quantifies the impunity of human rights will always fall. And America is on the verge of collapsing. You can see it happening every day, every second, every moment. And the problem that we're not looking at, sister, we don't want to take our heart and blame the white man. We've tried everything that this man has imposed on us in a good standing, but we are not blaming him for his racial bigotry, and we all know that to be true. So I wanted to share that much with you as I continue to listen on to your show, and you are right. You are right, 100%. Until we start thinking independently, then that freedom will return back into our hearts. Back to you, Sister Leona.
I agree with you on some of those things, especially this country, the way it's falling. It is falling because it's not getting the respect that it used to get. But I was also going to say, Mariam is going to be leaving us in about 10 minutes, too. So I'd like to know, Mariam, if you have anything you want to respond to that or have anything to say before you go.
Yeah, that was interesting because I think the native people, they have the solution to everything that's happening, not only in the United States, but in the world. What I strongly believe is the white people, and I am, unfortunately, I am white, but I think the idea, the illusion that we can possess something or somebody else, I think that's the bottom of all the issues that we have. We have all these world issues, you know, because we are going against universal law. And we are going against what we see in nature, the natural law. While we are part of the whole natural system, but we think that we can stand above that. And that means that we try to be some kind of gods, which we can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when that's why we also have pollution, climate problems, mass incarceration, all the things, because we are going against natural law. So we are going against ourselves.
Yes.
And I think that's the ground structure of all the issues we have.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
You know, I wanted to say, Marion, before you go, and Chinook, you too, before you go, if you can let the audience know.
But this is interesting. I don't want to leave yet. Is Chinupa still there? Is he still there? Because he's so interesting for me to listen to.
I want all of you to give your information. And as far as Sheila Arnold, I'm going to be interviewing her hopefully Tuesday to talk more about her situation with her son and with her situation with her sister at the time. And I'm hoping that maybe someone will hear and maybe be able to help her in that situation to get answers to what happened with her son.
Yes. Answers have to come to the surface, Sheila. You really have to write to it.
I'm sorry?
I said you have to write to the answers. Really, really. Even when it's a long road, but it's so needed to honor your son.
Yeah, I was going to say what Chinupa was saying, and you were planning on responding to that, but finish what you were saying.
Yeah, that came up to me, that it's a long road, Sheila, to get the answers, but it's so crucial also for your son, because he's still there, you know, energy doesn't die.
Yes, and I really feel that in my spirit, and I often say that the day that I was on my way there, nobody knew that I chose to take the young lady to see her brother. And I feel that it was God that I was allowed to be there. No one sees their loved one's body leave the prison and the condition. That's very, very, very unusual. And I feel that this is something that I have to do, not just for myself, but like I said, I'm a believer. And like you said, everyone, the accountability of going against God's natural laws. That is it.
Yes, and because
that's it. Yeah, exactly. That's really the bottom line, and that's my drive. That's it. You too will be accountable, but I must expose. I must put my story out there. We should all put our stories out there, because one day too, we all will be accountable for the right and the wrong that we've done, because we don't own the universe. There's, like they say, higher power, whoever that is to you. And you will one day, just like my son is in the ground, you will not, you know, everybody has to meet their maker. And that's the bottom line for me, my drive, because I could, you know, I do my part, and then I'm out of here, just like all the presidents, or just like, you know, Mr. God bless his soul, Colin Powell. You know, he did his part, right or wrong. His works followed him, and I'm a firm believer in that. And that's one reason why I will stay and keep moving and try to bring unity and all stories together for the accountability. And one other thing I want to add in there, like when I was raising my sister, her sister's kids, one of her sons, he became schizophrenic. And I went to the courts to try to get him help. You know what they told me? Because they shut down the mental institution in Indianapolis, Indiana. The judge personally, because I stood up to the judge, he said, ma'am,
I'm so sorry. The system is broken, and we must send your son to prison. They sent him to prison. He's schizophrenic. Diagnosed as schizophrenic. And they were like, man, your mom is standing up to the judge, but yet and still the prosecutor and them, they still sent him to prison.
It's really insane.
But they shut in Indianapolis, they shut it down, the mental hospital, there is no more. And so it's Indiana is crazy off the chain. They are passing Chicago and Gary in murders and killings and shootings. It's horrible there.
That's why I say in this country, mental illness is a big issue and addictions, but they choose, rather than to have long-term residential treatment facilities, they choose prison. And as Chinupa was saying, Chinupa, I wanted you to finish what you were saying, too, about the oppression that even the Indians go through. This is in the United States of America, which I don't consider it America. I consider it United, though. It's supposed to be, but it's not. And like I say all the time, people in other countries used to respect this country because it was united. But they don't respect it anymore because they see all the division. And it's division that's man-made division between a population that puts themselves superior to others.
You know, that is so very true, Sister Leona. And I will say this in conclusion to answer some of your guys' understandings very seriously. Until we start looking at all these things, remember, America is just like any other country. From Rome, the Greeks, Egyptians, Mediterraneans, Mesopotamia, all of them, they all fell to the power of the race that lived there that quantified and very popular within an independent structure, okay? Now, get this. This is the hard part for people to relate to. We can all talk about our Heavenly Father, God, whatever you want to call him. And if you keep giving strength and homage to their God, not knowing your own God, because deep inside your heart, you have your own way of praying. You don't have to use the white man's God, Jesus, Heavenly Father, whatever you want to call him. No, get back to your own, and your healing process and your journey on the red road will be complete, because then you'll understand how we use freedom to enforce the independent structure of holding the white race accountable. Now, the reason why these systems constantly are failing, because they never work to begin with, even if they were called insane asylums, okay? They never work. Mm-hmm. They never will. This is the mindset of how they use capitalistic control to control your soul and your mind and your ability to think freely. Now, the hard part is this. Let's say all of us, and you're all welcome to come on our show. It's called the Indigenous Voices of People. Every Friday and Saturday from 5 o'clock Mountain Time to 6:30 Mountain Time. Friday and Saturday, 5 o'clock to 6:30 Mountain Time on Fridays and Saturdays. And hear the Indigenous voices talk about the issues that go on in Indian country. Now, and I will conclude with this. The great mystery himself never incarcerated mankind, let alone the animals. Okay? He never incarcerated his sister, the grandmother earth we walk upon. Okay? But it's civilized and modern man that had that corporate capability to understand why the rich keep lusting for minerals and rocks and stones. This is going back, clear back to the time immemorial before we were all born. They've been doing this because they could not accept the teachings of their higher power, giving them a free passage to live in the abundance of the earth. They couldn't accept it. They wanted to outdo that physical power and that spiritual power. And so according to those books, like I said, I read them. And that book of Revelations, when I go back to it, the synagogue is about all these rich Jewish people, real Jewish people. Okay, real rich ones. The real rich ones were brought up from the devil himself. This is why that's all they lust for is money. No different than here in my country, Turtle Island. They took the coin metal and replaced it with paper metal, okay? They used this value of monetary existence, what they call mammon, to destroy people's thinking ability. Look, the man, the civilized and modern man, have been stealing since he was taught how to steal. They weren't honorable in taking in a spiritual foundation to give the great mystery to Mother Earth. Thank you for giving us the ability to feed ourselves, whether it was the animals, whatever. Okay, that was the way. But modern civilized man, they steal because they want to be in power of the rest of humanity, just like the four-legged, okay? And so when I go back to the synagogues of how the Jewish people, devil himself, that's why they call them Luciferians, okay? They keep doing this over and over. And they're going to keep doing until we realize that they have to be stopped, and they can be. And here's how. If every people of color, no matter what country you are, where you're from, even in my country, a third line, if we all band together and start filing human rights complaints on a genocide and a propitiate level, we can make them fall again. It's never a first until we try. Propitiate fundamental practice is a Latin term. When I was over there in Italy and those other countries, I learned that over there, because propitiate fundamental practice means when you annihilate a race and that race cannot reproduce itself. Genocide, on the other hand, genocide creates half-breeds. So many countries around this globe have half-breeds in them. You know it and I know it, but the animals are the only ones still in pure form, right or wrong. That's right. You see, this is how civilized and modern man done to us. And I always reflect this to two people. Take a look at the red man and the black man and see what that white man has done to us. They stripped us of our land, our culture, our way of life, and our names. Now we're using his name. I don't want to call my sister Leona, sister Leona. I want to call her my sister. And whatever name she comes with that, that's what I want to honor her, because she is my sister. My sister, no matter how you look at it. I don't want to use that term, belonging to the white man. That gives more power to them when we keep embracing and using their names. The Great Mystery didn't say that. Take on this white man's name and do this. Keep my children, if you follow me, take this. No, he did not say that. We live off the earth. We have names of the earth. And that's what we need to get back to. And when you take that power away from the white race, that's when you know he will be coming at your door knocking for forgiveness. And it's going to be hard for all of us to do that, because after all the atrocities he's inflicted upon us, we got to remember how to say no to him. But I wanted to share that with all of you and myself, because if we follow this practice of utilizing propitiate fundamental practice and genocide and file human rights complaints with other countries that do not like the way this empire called America is, then and only then can we change the system. We can, to implement more of these, decarceration in our own country. Remember, America is the most heinous incarceration country, that everybody's locked up, even the four-legged and the winged creatures. And until we take it back as a people, then and only then can we free everything. And the great mystery is waiting for us. Right now, the spiritual awakening has returned. It came back in 2013, and it's almost 13 years old. We still got 5 years to catch up to it. And I'm confident that we can do that. But let's collectively think of how we are going to take these measures on to file human rights complaints against America and every state that has mass incarceration rates of our people of color. And I leave you all with that. You can call us on Saturday and Fridays from 5 to 6:30. Get on our radio show. It's the same area code, 657-383-1630. It's called the Indigenous Voices of People. Thanks to my sister. She's the one who gave us that opportunity to have our show. And you're all welcome to come on her and voice and state your issues of concern. And I'll leave it at that and back to you. I love you all, and thank you, sister, for allowing me to come on. You have a great day. I'm working on your boy's case from a different loft, and I'm still on it. I haven't forgot about you, sister. I'm on it. Thank you, and I love you all. Thank you. Aho.
Chinupa, I'd like to respond to one thing on that, though. Everything that you were saying is actually true. But I want to say one thing. We're living in a time now where, when we talk about, as it says in, you mentioned Revelations, as it says in Revelations chapter 12, verses 7 to 12, it says that the evil one and his followers were thrown out of heaven onto the earth. And we right now, we're dealing with spiritual wickedness on this earth. But what I was going to say is that we know that all DNA came from Africa. We know that. We know that the people have expanded throughout the world from that very country. We know that because of the equator and the environment that they're in, the pigmentation of the skin is different. We do have people who are Caucasian, who are brothers and sisters. Then we have those who are, like Marion mentioned too, corporations. So we have people in power who are of Caucasian race who feel that they're superior to all other races, the brown, the black, the red, the beige. You know, we have these enemies in this country who are trying to control all things. And as you mentioned, we all need to come together, all in unity, who feel that we are all brothers and sisters. And we need to do something about it because it's not being done. So what you're saying is exactly true. We have these people controlling our country. And until we all get together and start writing to the United Nations or whomever it has to be to make changes, the prison system needs to be reviewed. It needs to be revamped. It needs to be reformed. It needs to be replaced. It needs to be replaced. Those who are in for wrongful convictions, those who are in for first-time offenses, those who were victims before becoming offenders. And the prisons are full of victims who were victims before becoming offenders. And look, society needs to realize when they voted for the death penalty, they need to realize how many innocent people were executed before they were found to be innocent. There's a lot of murderers out there in society who thought that they were the so-called righteous who have killed innocent people through the death penalty. So we have all so many things to review, so many things to look at. But right now, as Sheila was saying, with her son being killed in prison, she hasn't gotten answers, and she needs answers. And there's so many others who have lost loved ones inside who are looking for answers. There has to be some accountability.
Can I ask a question? Why are the lawyers so afraid? They represent the law. Why is it so hard to find a lawyer? What are they afraid of?
They're afraid of the unions. The law enforcement and the Department of Corrections nationwide, as I mentioned previously, they have a powerful, powerful union. And every time anything happens, the union members come out to defend the very people that are doing these barbaric acts. They're representing these very prison officials, wardens, correctional officers. I have interviewed Donald J. Vodica, who was a veteran CO, correctional officer in California, who exposed all of his peers that were doing all this injustice. And I had Michael Johnson and Maryam, you remember them. He was a lieutenant with the Montana Department of Corrections. He was on the show talking about the treatment, the inappropriate treatment. We've had people on the show that worked in the penal system that finally came forward and are talking about all the injustices that go on. And yet we have the media out there promoting law enforcement, promoting all these things, and not even talking about the injustices going on in the prisons. We have lawyers that are becoming now bankruptcy lawyers or malpractice lawyers because they're too afraid, they're too cowardly to go up against the system. And that's the problem we're having in this country today. So many people have been killed. Again, I go back to Daryl Rainey, scalded to death by guards who were laughing about it while everybody on the block could hear him screaming. They kept him in a shower 180 degrees until his bones, his muscles, his skin separated from his body. There's no reason for it. Sad just thinking about it, thinking that we could be going through all this, people are going through this in this country. This country is the worst country in the world from what other countries are saying, and it's true. Mass incarceration, Marion, you mentioned it yourself. How many lifers in the Netherlands? 25? And here we have 2.3 million people.
Yeah, and I think that it's not only about the sentence, but the reason why somebody gets a sentence. I mean, if somebody has committed a huge crime and he gets life, they also look at the circumstances in which a crime has taken place. And the psychological condition. And that's not what's happening in the United States. In the United States, it's about locking up as much people as possible because it makes money, it disturbs communities, and it divides more, you know, the different races of people, the different colors. And what I said, it leads to dividing between communities, between groups, and as long as people fight each other, they don't stand up and unite and protest.
Yes.
And that's, I think, the whole problem. And I think when you look corporal, then I think what's the evil part, in my opinion, the evil part is that a monetary value is put on life. And for me, life itself is sacred. So when I look at an incarcerated individual in my country, in the prison, then I see somebody who has committed a crime. I don't deny the crime, but I realize that behind that crime is a human being. And life is, in my opinion, that's for me religion, life is sacred. And what we do now in this capitalism is we put a monetary value to life. We do it with people, we do it with animals also. And that's for me very evil. And that's an intrinsic reason why I wrote the book and why I do this work. Because that touches me too. I am also life. I am part, you know, life is one for me. Life in all living forms is one energy. And I think, yeah, what I said, putting a monetary value to life is evil, is speaking the language of the devil. That's for me, if you want to talk about God and the devil, that's for me the devil speaking.
Exactly.
And that's why we have all these problems, environmental problems, pollution.
Yeah.
This whole system, because also the environment, also, you know, the planet, it's all sacred life, and we go against mm-hmm. sacred life. And that's why mm-hmm. I think if we do not change our mindset, if we do not accept that we are part of the earth, we cannot possess the earth, we are part of it. That's our position. When I was in this spring, I was in my garden and there were all kinds of very little baby bees. And they sat on my arm and I looked at the bees on my arm and I thought, you and I are both a living form. We have a different goal in life. We are different types, but the life in the bee and the life in me, it's the same life. And it's both sacred. And that's what we've lost. That's the connection we have lost. And why we have all these problems and all these imbalances, because it's all about balance, equilibrium.
Mm. I remember years ago, as I mentioned previously to someone else, when I was a kid growing up, walking home from school, we walk by the Mayflowers, the lilacs, all these beautiful flowers, and they smell so nice. And you can't even get the scent anymore. Nothing is the same as it used to be because of pollution, because of, you know, the corporations, as you say, all these businesses going on. And there's even in the environment is so different. But then you have all these people coming up now. I don't know if it's because they're younger or wealthier or what. They're making all these decisions that go against even God's will. And that's what really makes me upset, because these decisions they're making are more harsh on crime. Why would they want to put more pain and suffering on people incarcerated because they were victims before becoming offenders or those who were wrongfully convicted? You know,
and I think when you look at people who commit a crime, then you have to go further back, because as Sheila explained, when she was raising 8 children, there was no help from the community. There was no money from the government that developed a social network. That's where it all started. So Sheila does a very beautiful job by raising 8 children, and she's abandoned and she's only controlled with and you know, lives with a fear that her children can be taken away. That's where everything started.
Yeah. And I want to add and say, all of my children, they had gifts and talents. And it says in the word, you know, we all have a purpose. We all have something in us to give back to one another. And my children were expressing that. But I had no money. One of the girls cried because they took her saxophone away. The lady said she could no longer rent it for her. My kids, I let them make a makeshift studio. They did. They did filming. They were so creative. But guess what? Because we were not wealthy, and no, there was nothing set up for them. They lost interest. The natural abilities that God had put in them, I could not nourish those, and I had no help. So they didn't know their identity. They couldn't believe in themselves. I couldn't get out of them what God has put in them so they can go out into society and feel good about themselves and be productive. That's where I was, you know, the failure comes just within the community, just not being able, because we can make a difference right in our community if we could just come together to block some of this as well. Just
exactly.
Right in the village, the community
and,
where we are.
And what I find so sad that, you know, politics does not create conditions for their own citizens to blossom.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Because as you say, you know, we are born and we want to, you know, open up like flowers on our own authentic ways. And with a good, in a good country with politics that is, takes care of its citizens, it creates the conditions for the people who blossom on their own authentic way and then contribute by diversity, because we all are different. We can all, by diverse, as a diverse kind of human, you know, a species, we can contribute to each other and strengthen each other. And now what you see is that this lack of creating conditions for the people creates all kinds of problems, and then somebody ends up in prison and only that moment of the crime is seen, but not that whole story behind it. That's not taken into account. They only look and, you know, judge that one moment, but it's a whole world and a whole path that has led to that moment. Judgment, we cannot judge the fact.
That's why I respect your philosophy in as far as just, you know, deeper justice, and you are about digging deeper into the issue, into the problems. As you say, not the offense, not the offender, but the causes behind all of these things. And this is what we really have to look at. And as I said, with the petition I have with change.org to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, people think, well, what's going to happen? We're going to put the worst of the worst in these long-term residential treatment facilities, and what are they going to do? They're going to let them out so they can commit crimes again? No. If it takes forever for them to be in a long-term residential treatment facility, at least they're getting the proper treatment while incarcerated. I mean, while in that treatment facility. If they're in for mental health issues, they can have the treatment, be getting the proper treatment. Or addictions, they can be healed. And while they're in these long-term residential treatment facilities, for those that have families, they can work on reunification. They can work on occupational therapy, physical therapy, you know, and getting them back on track so the stability is there and the unity is there, and they can be productive when they go out in the community. But as long as they're in the prisons, these things are going to continue. People are going to die in prison. People are going to go crazy in prison. You have people that are targeted in prison that are deprived of taking any kind of programs at all. A lot of them kept in their cells, the solitary confinement, for years. And there's people that have been in solitary confinement for 39 years, lost in the system, and no one knows or cares. And these are the problems that we have in this country. This is supposed to be a country well-respected by all countries, when in fact it's the one country, different from others, that have the most inhumane treatments that can be possible. Long-term residential treatment facilities need to take place, replace these prisons. And Marianne, just like Franz Kurz from Germany, just like Norway, just like all these other countries, where they talk to the prisoners like human beings, where they, the maximum sentences that they have for the majority of prisoners is 25 years. They can't give enough punishment in this country. Some prisoners have 3 life sentences. Who in the world lives to do 1 life sentence, never mind 3 to 5?
Yeah,
it's
that's
crazy.
It's a way of power play. Like giving somebody 150 years or whatever. That's just, you know, showing the muscles, power play, and bring fear into the communities, because there is a lot of fear in your country. And when people are afraid, then they can be used better than they keep being divided. Then they, you know, there is no trust, and if you keep them divided, then they will not unite a protest. There should be much more protest, peaceful protest.
Who instills the fear? The government instills the fear, just like the media. And they do the same thing with countries. I've traveled 11 third world countries. I've been in these countries that have told me, they treated me with so much hospitality. But they say in the United States of America, they instill in people fear. Because they plan to go to war, and every time they go to war with the country, they come back with something from that country, whether it be their diamonds, their gold, their money, their aluminum, their copper, their brass, whatever it is. They instill fear, and that's what they do with prisoners. They instill fear to make prisoners look 10 times worse than they are. Not to say that not all prisoners are bad, but to say that the majority of them, there's hope for them. You know, they can be productive if people would give them a chance. Marianne, we have about 10 minutes. Can you give your contact information, your information? We'll pick up on it next Wednesday with you. And then, Sheila, I want you to give the audience your information, and we will be interviewing Sheila again on the death of her son and her sister.
My website is www.deepajustice.com. My email is mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. I am on Facebook, I am on Instagram, and I am on LinkedIn, and I have a Facebook page also called Deeper Justice.
And Marianne will have a book coming out, and you will it be around January or February?
Yeah, I hope
so.
The name of the book is That's Lost in the System, a deconstruction of the penal system.
Marianne Jacobs, psychosocial therapist, can be found on the internet. Just go on and type her name, and she's all over the place. Marianne, I want to thank you once again for being on with us, and I look forward to next. Again, I want to thank you. I feel so honored when you come on. And as well, Sheila, do you want to give your information? If anyone is able to or wants to ask questions, give feedback. Sheila Arnold.
Yes, and one thing I want to say before I give my information, if Marion, before you leave, if you could just expound a little bit on the drugs and the capital part in the system, because they said that was in my son's system. But my name is Sheila Arnold, S-H-E-I-L-A, on Facebook, and my email address is sheilaarnold429@gmail.com. That's how you can get in contact with me.
Okay. You wanted Marianne to expand on...
Yeah, we didn't. I just wanted to hear a little bit of her point of view about, like, the drugs coming through there, and what, you know, just her thoughts on that, and then all the profit and the people, what is her knowledge on that. It's a consistent problem in the prison.
Before you go on with that, I just want to let people know to find out how drugs get into the prisons. If you go on the internet and you say guards or correctional officers caught smuggling drugs into prison, you're going to see a lot of information about it.
Yeah, that's a problem here in the Netherlands too. It's a contraband, like cell phones, drugs, and that's also happening in the United States. It's, you know, brought in by family or by staff who can make a little bit more money. There is a whole industry, I think, inside of the system around drugs. What's exactly your question, Sheila?
Well, that's it, because it's you basically really, you've answered it. I mean, it's it's a racket. You know, everybody from the top to the bottom, somebody benefits from, you know, the drugs.
Yeah,
you know,
I think, Chris,
you know, how does that work?
Okay, yeah, I think what, you know, on personal level, it's of course it's the person who bring it in. That can be staff and it can be family, but on the whole, you can see if people are have drug issues, that's the more reason to keep them locked up or to punish them further, to, you know, by putting them in solitary confinement. I mean, it's the opposite of rehabilitation, and the system is focused on the opposite of rehabilitation, and that's punishment and revenge and keeping the system full. But in your case with your son, I would really, you know, you told your story and you said there are so many pieces missing and so much information has not been given. So is it sure that he did have had drugs? And the story is strange. The story that has been told.
Yeah, they
to
said
you.
it was in his system, different type drugs, and they had said that they had seen some paraphernalia in there, and also I did wanted to mention that these 3 days before and up until that time, it says in the report that also 3 correctional officers no longer work there, and I don't know why that is either. All of a sudden, you know, right. They put that in the note that they no longer work there. So, and my son had said, Mommy, a few times that if something ever happens to me, he said on the phone that a guard had something to do with it. So since they put in there, they put it in the report, like, you know, the drugs, and he was a drug dealer in a prison and things like that. That leads me to think, you know, why is all this information here? Do you know something? What do you know to try to make him look like a bad person?
Yeah, exactly.
That he did this to himself, like he could have accidentally just did all this by himself to himself. It makes no sense.
It doesn't.
Especially to stab himself the number of times that they claim, multiple times. How can anyone stab himself?
Exactly.
He has it in his head, his body, his upper and lower extremities, blood, warrants, all of that. And they said he just did all this to himself. That's
impossible. Yeah, but that's impossible. I cannot believe it. But also when you look at the drugs, you know, is somebody, when he's incarcerated in that system and he does drugs, is he then a bad person? I think I would do it too. And I think when I would be incarcerated, maybe I would want to use drugs to forget where I am. It's also easy on the surface.
They do say that.
Yeah. And that's, you know, how this whole business keeps going.
Yeah.
And that's why it's such an evil system.
Boy, that's the word. No other word. Just evil.
It is.
Pick up
it's
on
really.
Wednesday, and I want to quickly, Esther, are you there? You wanted to say hello. I have someone that is very interested, and she's going to be doing some radio talk on restorative justice. And her name is Estika. Estika, you want to say hello real quick?
Yeah. Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. Yeah. So, hi, everyone. My name is Estika, and I'm an undergraduate student at Arizona State University, whose main major kind of surrounds restorative justice. It's this program called Justice Studies, where we actually learn a lot about, like, the treatment of prisoners, school-to-prison pipeline, restorative justice, procedural justice, all these justice-related issues. So I will probably be coming on next week and talking a little bit about restorative justice. So, I'm excited.
we look forward to having you on, Astika, and this is a blessing. I really hope and pray that younger people like Astika will get more involved in some of this restorative justice and some of the criminal justice reform, because it's very well needed in this country. It's very important that we all start looking at some of these issues, because it can't go on like this. The United States of America has mass incarcerations in comparison to every other country in the world that does not have mass incarcerations, that does not have life and life without. And we need to start looking at some of these issues and bring in awareness, shedding light. So I thank everyone for being on. I look forward to next Wednesday. And Sheila, we will pick up. I will be in touch with you to let you know when we have you on the show again, hopefully Tuesday, and we'll talk more about that. But I want to thank everyone once again for being on. Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. It's a pleasure to have you on all the time, Marion, and I look forward to next Wednesday. Thank you
Me
so
too.
Much.
Thank you.
Thank you.